That was Meredith K. Clark. Don't miss her in Winter Song at Portland Center Stage. Na, na, na. Why do we sound so good? Because we're at Dead Aunt Thelma's studio and Mike Moore is engineering for us. Thanks, Dead Aunt Thelma's. Thanks, Mike. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Adventures in Artslandia. I am Susanna Mars, and today I have the pleasure of inviting Cynthia Whitcomb, a playwright, here today, and Stephanie Mulligan. They are going to begin rehearsals for Cynthia's newest play, Parnassus on Wheels, tonight at Lakewood Theater in Lake Oswego. Have you guys worked together before?
Yeah. We have. We are frequent collaborators. Mm-hmm.
Our last hit was Seven Wonders of Ballynock,
which I saw and I adored.
Mm-hmm. Of course, we go back to Holidays.
Right.
The three of us.
Right. Which was a wonderful play that Cynthia wrote with Mark Aceto. Did that for a couple of years at Artist Rep,
yeah,
which was wonderful. So now you're working back at Lakewood, and it's Parnassus on Wheels. And when I was reading the notes, I noticed that you mentioned that Goody Cable, a friend of yours, had mentioned the story to you, a wonderful Portlander, owner of the Rimsky-Korsa Coffee House, which we were talking about, and the Sylvia Beach Hotel.
And
she's a wonderful person.
The coffee house has been going 30 years just about. It's on 12th Street in Southeast. And it has live classical music every night and coffee and desserts and tea and is adorable and hilarious.
Right. And Goody is a wealth of information and delight.
She knows everyone. She knows everything. You'll say, "Did you read this book?" And she'll go, "Yeah, I love that." And then you'll notice that it's dedicated to her. She's that person.
Right. And of course, because the Sylvia Beach Hotel, each room in the hotel is dedicated to an author.
And she had friends decorate all the rooms. And I decorated one of them, the Shakespeare room.
Is that right?
Yeah. So it has props from all 37 plays. It has a replica of the throne of England with the Stone of Scone under it. And it's very fun. And she has got the J.K. Rowling room, this like Harry Potter's dorm room, Hogwarts. It's really, really fun.
Well, have you been friends for a long time?
Yeah, we've been friends for, I don't know, maybe 15 years.
And you're an incredibly prolific playwright.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm curious, just in terms of your process for people who are interested in writing, you feel to me, and I hope this is not an offensive remark, like a blue-collar writer.
That's right.
You get down to business, you work, and you write.
I think of it as a craft rather than an art, because art has way too much pressure. And, you know, that's for the future generation to figure out. Mm-hmm. So it's like making chairs. Mm-hmm. I know how to make a chair that stands solidly on 4 feet and has some interest and will hold weight. And, you know, so it's like I make chairs and it's made out of paper, but I just make pages, make stories, make plays. Yeah, I did, as you know, film and theater for 30 years, and I've been doing this full-time since 2007. So I love this. This is my dream job, really.
Mm-hmm. And what's your schedule in the day?
I don't write all the time. I don't believe in writing every day. Mm-hmm. I know that goes against a lot of popular wisdom, but I think we all go in cycles. Mm-hmm. And there's like three parts of the creative cycle. There's the exciting lightning strike of inspiration, followed by the doing all the work, even though you're no longer high. And then there comes the time to stop and just let the ground go fallow, let the well refill, stop. And a lot of people don't honor the stopping part, but it's totally essential to a healthy life, a creative life. People that never stop, those are your Kurt Cobains and your Mozarts who die young. You know, you just have to work the way nature works. So that's what I believe in. So sometimes I don't write at all, and then sometimes I throw down a play really fast. And I write at least one or two plays every year.
How did this one come? How did Parnassus on Wheels come about? Was it a strike of information and boom?
Yeah. Goody had told me about this book. It was one of her favorite books, written in 1917. And so I read it and loved it, because it's about two people in middle age who've never fallen in love before. A sort of farm woman who's had this kind of life of just baking biscuits every day and feeding chickens every day and stowing away her egg money. And she's had really no life of any interest to her. And she reads books and loves books, and that's where life is. And she meets this little Irishman who she buys his rolling gypsy wagon filled with books, where he goes farm to farm and sells books. And he wants to sell it, and she just impulsively buys it. So it's about a woman who's breaking the rules of her day, who's taking rights that women didn't have yet. Women couldn't even vote in 1917. They didn't get the vote for another 3 years. So it's about a woman who frees herself and has an adventurous life and falls in love in middle age, having never been in love with somebody who's also middle-aged who's never been in love. So the newness and the freshness and the tenderness of two people who lived 40 years and never loved anyone is just that. I love that. That inspired me.
It sounds beautiful. So she buys the book cart, and then she goes on a journey.
Then she goes off farm to farm through the New England countryside. It takes place in 1910. And he's so worried that she's going to get in trouble out there on the highways that he sort of follows her to make sure she doesn't get murdered or anything or robbed. And then it sort of becomes a comedy road movie love story.
Oh, that's so lovely. Now, Steph, were you always planning on directing this play, or how do you guys come to your partnerships?
I come to Stephanie and say, I have a new play.
And you say,
and
yes.
I say, hey, let's sell this. This looks great.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, we have a really good creative connection. So Cynthia can give me a script, and I can look past, okay, that's magical, that can't happen, but what can we do that's magical on stage? And just translating it to breathe life through the actors. And I'm so excited about just getting launched on this baby.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested, of course, all the books on the cart must be, you know, varied. How do the books inspire her, and who does she meet up, and why does she, and how does she sell the books on her journey?
Well, Roger, the Irishman that she buys it from, and Helen are both deeply in love with books, and so that's partly what they have in common. But they're going to farms where the only thing they read is the Farmer's Almanac and the Sears catalog.
Oh, right.
They have no books. They have no access to books. At this time, most of America was farms. More than half the people in America lived on farms. If you go to town, they have a blacksmith, because really before cars and trucks. There's a few cars and trucks, but, I mean, you might have seen one. You don't own one. You
know? Right, and on top of it, who would have time to read? I mean, they work from dawn to dusk.
Except in the winter.
And then, oh, so
when the land goes fallow.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Kind of comes full circle.
Yeah.
Well, you think about the currency of this story today, when we've got so many cuts in arts funding and so many cuts in library funding, public libraries that close, and there is an actual need for bookmobiles. People in neighborhoods have created their own little libraries outside their homes.
Yes.
Because we do have a need for art, for things of beauty, for stories.
And for another world beyond the world we live in. We live in a world that right now is pretty stressful, and we have cousins who don't feel the same way that we feel about things, and it tears some families up, especially around the holidays. So to go back to a time when there was a way to escape into another world. So you might work on a farm all day, but then at night you read Treasure Island or Little Women or, you know, any of these really books that are transporting to another world, and it enriches people's inner life.
Right.
And while they're plowing the next day, they can be thinking about Long John Silver.
Right.
Literally.
Right.
So, yeah.
Oh, that's really beautiful how the books translate. So their courtship, is it more about the books or the journey, or is it both?
Well, it's both.
And it has to be both.
And things happen. I mean, crazy stuff happens. And it surprises them, because they just don't expect that's ever going to happen to them. It's at a time when women were old maids by before 30. If you weren't married by 30, this was not going to happen. It was a whole other, you know, the old maid card game. Old maid was a real curse. And plus, you know, it was difficult anyway. And so it comes upon them as a total shock that they love each other, because that just wouldn't even occur to them in normal life. It's not like they hold hands and walk through the glade.
Oh, it's interesting, too, because it sounds as though Helen is a really independent woman, which was unusual, more unusual in the day. And so her falling in love, how is that handled, you know? How does he feel simpatico with her, you know?
Yeah, he kind of falls for her first, because she's this remarkable woman, and she just doesn't notice that she is in love with him until she thinks, you know, there's a train wreck that she thinks he's squashed under. And so that makes her suddenly realize, oh my God, I've never fallen in love, and now that I do, I don't find out till it's too late. And then when he's not squashed, of course, she's just a huge mess, and they figure it out, you know.
And I love that she is a strong woman who finds her voice, has a voice. You know, she makes her own way in this time. And if we look back on photos of our ancestors, and we just imagine which of these women spoke out for herself, mm-hmm. was allowed to, mm-hmm. or drove through the allowed part and just was.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I think about looking at photographs of women, mm-hmm. I think there's kind of a pipe dream about what women were in that day. And as more stories are coming to the fore about courageous acts,
yes.
by women and people of all colors and backgrounds, it's feeling as though there are loads more stories about those types of people who had the courage than not.
I just wrote a little piece about a woman named Mary Bethune, mm-hmm. who was a black girl who went, you know, walked 5 miles to a little one-room schoolhouse. And then when she became an adult, she spent $1.50 to open her own school, mm-hmm. which then became a bigger school, which then became a college. And at a time when Eleanor Roosevelt and Franklin were in the White House, she was president of a college. She mm-hmm. was the first woman in America to be president of a college. And she was a black woman. And it's still there, McLeod Bethune College. She founded that for $1.50. And so I just did a little piece on her in a documentary that just came out. And so she's a remarkable woman. That's a true thing. And now she's not the normal woman. She's the one who says, you know, and when Eleanor Roosevelt said, what's it like to be president of university when no other women are doing that? She says, well, if you start your own school, they can't tell you can't be president, you know. So there were those women, and there always have been those women, but at this time, that was a rare thing. Mm-hmm. It was a rare thing.
Hmm. Do you feel moved, especially now, to tell these types of stories?
Absolutely. Because it feels like we've lost some ground. It feels like we gained some things, you know, in the 60s and 70s, and now we've fallen backwards into some kind of, I don't understand how it ever happened that anyone thought women aren't as smart or as capable or as strong as men. How did this happen? Somewhere along in the history of the world, somebody got a way bad idea, and
And it's so interesting because when I think about even the farm life, women were working their butts off.
Yeah,
that's right.
All throughout ages, you know. And men were working too, but...
But when we talk about farmers, we should be talking about both men and women.
Right.
The women were also farming and right. are still.
Right. Yeah. And it's just interesting because... I was making dinner and I thought to myself, wow, if I didn't have a contemporary kitchen, breakfast, lunch, and dinner would consume my entire day.
Yeah.
There'd be nothing else. There'd be no
yes.
time. Because you are starting the food for the breakfast, then you're cleaning that. I mean,
yeah.
That's right. Interesting.
And Helen's so angry she can tell you exactly how many loaves of bread she's baked in the last 10 years. You know, she's had enough. She's fed up.
Right. And does she live alone?
Her brother. You think it's her husband at first, but she lives with her brother who's become this poet. He's kind of like the contemporary farmer Thoreau. He's become famous for being this contemplative kind of poet guy. She thinks it's kind of the bunk, and she's very annoyed with him. But like, he has a following. He's become this big best-selling author. Well, he will sit out on the plow and ponder the sun glistening off the backside of his mule, you know. So it's funny too.
Yeah, I was reading a lot about Emily Dickinson recently, and cool. Just such interesting stories of women and how they've been tied to taking care of men for many reasons. Mm-hmm. And to examine their lives a little more closely, you learn their small acts of bravery and the way they speak out mm-hmm. and take charge of their own lives in the way that they can. It's amazing. I know you gravitate to those types of stories, Stephanie.
Yeah, the lens is so important to me, mm-hmm. the lens of women's stories through women's voices. Got a funny little thing to read from Morley's original book.
Neat.
Okay, this is Helen speaking. Mm-hmm. And all the time I was counting eggs and turning out 3 meals a day and running the farm, when Andrew got a literary fit and would go off on some vagabond jaunt just to collect adventures for a new book. I wish you could have seen the state he was in when he came back from these trips, hoboing it along the roads without any money or a clean sock to his back. One time he returned with a cough you could hear the other side of the barn, and I had to nurse him for 3 weeks. When somebody wrote a little booklet about the Sage of Redfield and described me as a rural Xantippe and the domestic balance wheel that kept the great writer close to the homely realities of life, I made up my mind to give Andrew some of his own medicine, and that's my story.
I love it.
And Xantippe was Socrates' wife. So they're blowing up Andrew as Socrates.
Oh, that's great.
And then Jeff Gorham plays the poet.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. The brother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. And now the love interest, he's an Irishman.
He's an Irishman.
How did he end up in the United States?
Well, he came over kind of when everyone came over, when mm-hmm. they had the potato famine. And
he's
all
a
New
traveler.
City. He's from Brooklyn, and he's just traveling through New England with
his cart
full of books, and he can tell you exactly, he has a little code to tell exactly how much he's paid for each book, so how much he has to sell it for to keep himself going, and so a little code inside each book in pencil.
Aww.
So yeah, just bringing literature to the people.
Oh, that's so neat.
So we're also telling an immigrant story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And a literacy story. Yeah, it has things in it, but it's also just good fun. Yeah.
That's nice. As I said, you are really gravitating to telling stories right now. What are stories that you're thinking about for future?
Well, I just finished a rough draft of one about the friendship between Bob Fosse and Herb Gardner and Paddy Chayefsky.
Oh, interesting.
It's called The Kings of the Carnegie Deli.
Mm.
And they were three neurotic, kind of depressed guys who were brilliant, brilliant, and very discouraged about their own stuff. So the other two would always buck up the third one.
Mm.
So when one's feeling suicidal, the other two are going, no. And so between the three of them, they kept each other going and productive through their most famous years.
Paddy Chayefsky. And this is a play?
It's a play, yeah, for three men. And it's, at the time, it's set in the early 70s when Paddy Chayefsky was writing News
Network.
Network.
Mm-hmm.
And Herb had done 1,000 Clowns and was working on a new play. And Fosse was doing, at the same time, Liza with a Z and Cabaret and Pippin.
Oh.
He won the Tony, the Oscar, the Emmy all that year.
Mm-hmm.
But then went into the hospital for suicidal, you know, went into Payne Whitney for wanting to kill himself. So that one, it's just a kind of play about friendship between men that you don't see very many friendship stories between men in this sort of way.
Interesting.
So that just, I don't know. I came across that and I went, well, I see that.
Well, just in terms of what's happening now, I think it's great to think about people who are broken. I mean, I'd have to say who isn't in some way
mm-hmm.
broken, not broken meaning not good, but just, you know, having stuff going on that hurts, supporting each other and knowing each other. Did they let each other know the other?
Yeah, they were best. They were very close and they had offices in the same building. So they had lunch every day and they would help work each other's story problems and creative problems out. And
do you have people like that in your creative life?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do. I'm an extrovert, so I do like to talk things around and kick things around because I think when I hear myself talk, I know what I think, kind
right.
of. So I've had different writing groups, and I still have some of those.
And you teach
friends.
Writing as well.
I teach writing as well.
Are you still currently teaching?
I just finished my fall class, and I'll teach another class starting in February if anybody's interested. That's a screenwriting class.
Oh, great.
But I do, playwrights are in it too.
Great.
And it's on my website, cynthiawhitcomb.com. People can find out about that sort of thing. And I take a bunch of writers transatlantic every spring too.
Oh, wonderful.
All across from Florida to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody writes all the way across the ocean. It's very fun.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
So, yeah, we
that's
do that
exciting.
Too.
And Stephanie, you've done a lot of travel in your work.
I have.
A lot of collaborations, international collaborations.
International collaboration is where it's at for me.
Is there something like that coming up for you?
Nothing on the near horizon, but this summer, the State Department asked me to be an arts envoy in Vietnam, and it was such a delight to work with young professionals in both Ho Chi Minh City and in Da Nang. It was really a gas.
Mm.
And I got to work with my buddy, Sharath Patel, who's doing sound design for this project as well.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So Parnassus on Wheels is going to open on January 5th. It's going to run through February 11th. It's going to be at lakewood-center.org. Go see it. You'll have a great time if you do. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you. It's been fun.
Little tree, little silent Christmas tree.